Welcome to The New Exchange, a podcast series that explores how everyone has a story to tell. My name is Kent Grandpierre, and this next episode is with a band that I love so damn much, The Aces. The Aces are a band from Utah that perfectly embody being a pure rock band and having an unapologetic love towards pop music. It's actually pretty crazy. I was one of the very first photographers to take photos of them right before their first album came out. You know, behind the scenes, portraiture, and even some of their live shows. And it's so crazy. Yeah, three albums later, and they have matured in a way that's massively awe-inspiring. And seeing that as a friend is something that just fills me with so much pride. Because along with growing as a band, they've also beautifully grown as people, figuring out that, well, some of them figuring out that they identify as queer. And on top of that, and this is probably my favorite thing about the band, is that they've also come to realize the importance of community, not just being in a community, but fostering a community. And yeah, it's something that they do that I think is just fantastic. I'm hard-pressed to think of another act that does such a brilliant job at both fostering and communicating with their community of fans the way the Aces do. I love it so much. Their most recent album is called I've Loved You For So Long, and it proves that they are a band that's here to stay. This interview is also particularly special because before the pandemic, we used to do this quite a bit, where I'd interview them about their music for various magazines, and yeah, we hadn't gotten the chance to do this in quite a while. We recorded this a few days after they played a sold-out show here in Brooklyn, and yeah, it felt so perfect getting to reconnect again. I do need to mention that there are a few instances where background noise creeps into the recording. That happens like maybe three or four times, and you'll barely notice, but just in case you hear it and you find yourself thinking that you're having a fever dream, no, that's not you, it's me. Sorry about that. But yeah, after you hear this episode, definitely be sure to check out their own podcast called Aces Space. Trust me, their chemistry and chatting is so unique, and after you hear today's chat, you're gonna love them, you're gonna want to hear more, and the great thing is you'll be able to get more by checking out their own podcast. This is The New Exchange with The Aces. Enjoy. So since we got more than two people on, something I've noticed over the years of doing this is, like, even though it seems like a super elementary thing to do, a good old-fashioned school roll call helps out people who are listening. So before I get into, like, the actual chat bit, I think we should just do, like, a good old-fashioned school roll call. So who wants to go first?
I can go first. Hello, everyone. I'm Crystal Ramirez, lead singer in the Aces.
What's up, guys? I'm Elisa Ramirez, the drummer of the Aces.
Hello, this is McKenna Petty, bass player of the Aces.
Hi, I'm Katie Henderson, guitarist of the Aces.
This is so wild. Like, we didn't try for this to be the way, but because of the way, like, my Zoom thingy is set up, you all did it, like, in sequence. Like, kind of like...
Oh, really?
Like,
yeah. Oh, sick.
Yeah, I got to follow, like, the little green square bit, so that's really funny. Guys, how are you? I mean... You literally just wrapped up a U.S. tour a few days ago. I saw you a few weeks back. Katie and I were talking about how it feels like that was months ago. But yeah, I feel like the only way to really start is to just point that out and just ask, how do you feel about how the tour just went?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been, like, the tour was so amazing, obviously so tiring as tour always is. So, like, we've literally just been sleeping for the past 4 days. We're, as you know, we were just chatting, but we're about to go to Australia and Japan. So it's really been like low-key Halloween season for us. Like, we haven't really been doing that much.
Yeah. And like, yeah, like you mentioned, the tour resumes in Australia and Japan next week. I have to know, is that going to be the first time you lot will have been to those parts of the world for like music?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. How beautiful is that?
Yeah, we're super excited. And none of us have been there at all, right, guys? No one's traveled there for fun or anything, right? So, yeah.
No.
I've been to the Tokyo airport for a layover, but that's it. Doesn't count.
So Ken's actually the Tokyo expert.
I'm the expert. I know the airport.
Yeah. Poor guy.
That's like people will say that. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, you go.
I was saying people will say that. But like, have you ever been to Utah? You know, like, we're from Utah. And people back, I've been to the airport. I'm like, okay, that
is really worth mentioning, not sure.
Going to Utah, but
oh, Do you know if you lot will have any time to be, I mean, obviously Tokyo is like very cool and prominent and like one of the best, biggest cities in the world, but I've heard from people who've gone over the years that Kyoto is obviously pretty cool too. Do you know if you guys are going there as well?
No, we're not, but I'm staying longer, and so my husband and I are going to go to Kyoto for like 5 days.
Oh, so man.
I hear it's more like traditional Japanese, like less of a city, more kind of get the full Japanese experience. So, yeah, I'm really excited to go to Kyoto.
Oh, man. The Aces group chat is going to be so full of envy that week, isn't it, Ben?
Yeah, definitely. Elisa and I are going to stay for an extra day to just explore Tokyo more, because I've heard, like, it's just such a crazy city. But, yeah, Ken's going to really, really travel all around Japan, and the rest of us are going to go home for Thanksgiving and finally be in one place for more than a week.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's just hit me. I mean, I have the dates in front of me, but wow, you guys will be back in time for Thanksgiving. That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for that type of international travel, it's a very pretty quick trip.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the shows are gonna be amazing. Like, something I've heard over the years of people who've gone, particularly Japan, I mean, Australia's great too, especially like Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne. I know they're great crowds, but I've heard Japanese people, like, they always have this kind of overt appreciation because they quite innately know it's always a journey to get there. So I'm just so happy you guys get to do that with, I mean, we're going to eventually talk about this, but can we point out that you're doing it with 3 albums under your belt? That's like pretty fucking badass. Like,
oh, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, we're excited. I think especially this album has taken us, you know, it's seeming like it's taking us to more and more places in our career. You know, we've built to this point now, do a lot of international travel. Here, we're hopeful that we'll be going to like South America, going to more countries that we haven't been to. And hopefully we're going to be playing a festival in Mexico. And, you know, it's just been really cool for this record to take us where it's been taking us, and to, you know, give us the connection to the fans that it's given us, which feels like an even deeper one. So yeah, it's been really cool.
Yeah, it's been really amazing to watch. And you know, I want to kind of go back to that New York show for a second, because I witnessed many things there, but there was something I witnessed specifically that I felt highlighted so much of the journey of the band and where you are now, because there was this beautiful moment that touched me where you mentioned how New York was the place where more or less allowed you, like the four of you, to be yourselves, especially in the context of feeling comfortable, like some of you are feeling comfortable being queer. And it's crazy because, you know, when you said that on stage, it hit me that there's this wild contrast between the then and the now. And I wonder, like, do you feel like, can you talk a bit about that, how that journey has been for you? Because being able to reflect on that on stage like that, it kind of showed me that maybe in the last few years, that's been kind of on your mind as well.
Yeah. I think like what's really cool about New York, and I think it is this way for a lot of people, you know, New York is like, everyone always calls it obviously like the melting pot, right? Like of culture, of people, of it's so diverse that you can find every type of person, every type of food, every type of, you know, it's just such a uniquely special like place. And when we first started going there, you know, we were just kids and our first management was based in Brooklyn. And so that's really the city that we started going to outside of our hometown. Like we would go to LA, yes, but the place that we were majority spending our time creating, exploring who we were. I mean, I like first started openly like dating and being out and queer in Brooklyn. Like I was going on dates with girls for like the first time in my life. So New York was like this place that kind of was like our hometown away from our hometown. Like all the things that we were so afraid about being ourselves that maybe would not be accepted in our actual hometown. New York was like, hey, like we accept you here. It kind of felt like, and the shows really reflected that in this really cool way. Like more people started coming to our shows in New York before they were coming to our shows pretty much anywhere. Like we were able to start playing shows and fans were showing up and traveling and coming to see us. And so it was like this really special, like, you know, like we were able to feel safe and feel like ourselves and feel accepted for who we were in a way that maybe Utah wasn't ready for and wasn't allowing us to be. And that was in New York. So it feels like this very, every time we play play Brooklyn or Manhattan, New York City in general, like, we just kind of almost always, we always say it feels like a hometown show because we really discovered the roots of who our band was there and felt like we could be truly like the most expressive artists and versions of ourselves that we so desperately wanted to be but didn't feel like we could be. New York was the place that really kind of gave us that like permission to be who we wanted to be as a band and as people. So it's just crazy to go back and play like Brooklyn Steel, you know, it's just so full circle.
Yeah, I think I said it to you a lot after when you got off stage, but you looked like the fucking Avengers on there. Like, you looked like just like super charged in that.
Yeah. No, we were, you know, like, it was so, the energy from the second we showed up at Loden to getting on stage was just like electric. Like, everyone was just so excited to be there and so excited to put on a show. And, you know, you step on that stage and you're like, holy fuck, it's a big room. Yeah. Like, this is a big room and like we're headlining, we're not opening, this is our show. And that's a feeling that just, you know, for like four suburban girls who fought to get anyone to come to their shows as teenagers for years and years and years, like, that is just a feeling you don't tire of when you have been, you know, promoting your own shows from the time you were like 13. You'd never get tired of like getting on a stage like Brooklyn Steel and being like, there will be people in this room. Like, it will be a full room of Aces fans in New York City. It's just, like, a very wild, wild feeling.
Yeah, you know I run the risk of, like, giving too many compliments, but it's been, like, a long time since we've had a proper chat. Like, something that, within everything you were saying there, Crystal, when I reflect on that time when you guys are here making the first album and we got to know each other, something that really struck me with what you said on stage and contrasting it with then is that, like, the four of you were so, like, on your shit when you were here that, like, even though you were young and figuring things out, it didn't necessarily feel that way. There's been a handful of artists I've seen that with where an act like Aurora comes to mind, like, from Norway. I've seen her come here to New York a couple times years and years ago and just, like, over the years getting older and older and then just being like, wow, back then you seemed a bit older. Like, kind of, you guys had a similar vibe when you came here, like, all those years ago, where it just kind of, like, felt like you're already this, like, unit. And it's kind of wild to see how that's only, like, solidified and intensified in a really good way.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think a lot of people don't know, and you know, Ken, but, like, we had been a band for, like, 7 years when we started doing it professionally. Like, we grew up together. And I think you can't fake that, like, time together, you know? And people say that to us a lot. They're like, wow, like, you guys, you play together so well and you like it feels like you guys really are this like unit, like you're very like a cohesive like group. And I'm like, yeah, I think that that's literally just like 20 years of playing together at this point now. Like, we're going on 20 years of being in a band together, and that time together, growing up together, evolving as a person together, going through pretty much everything at each other's side, I think is really to attribute to that kind of like maybe strength in the group, you know, like strength in that perception.
I feel like too, we've always been like from a very young age, just like very self-motivated and like really taken it seriously and like just worked really hard, which I'm really grateful for. And I feel like we as a unit like work together in that way too, where we really like motivate each other. And like, I feel like from a very young age, we've just been like very focused, which I think has for sure gotten to us like where we are now.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've seen that as well. And it's been really just great seeing the growth. And, you know, in addition to that, and I feel like being in that room that night, it kind of like, I already knew this, but it was like really great seeing it in like a physical context. And Katie, I'd really like to get your vibe on this as well. Cause like, it's so wild to me how you four have kind of become role models for like queer people, for women identifying people, for non-gendered people alike. And it's noteworthy to me because, again, I contrast it with when we met. I knew the initial goal for you was to play music, to have it be your life. And it's kind of crazy to think that for some people, you've kind of become role models. And I use that word very deliberately because I feel like from what I've seen over time and what I saw in that room, it's not necessarily something you shy away from, which I think it's interesting. I think sometimes you hear people say, like, don't consider me a role model, as opposed to kind of realizing that, like, no, there's people who care about what we have to say.
Yeah, I think like it's kind of cool. I always think of it as kind of like a ripple effect, I guess. Like there's people who inspire us and then hopefully we're able to inspire other people. And I can say for me personally, like Crystal and Elisa really inspired me to come out and live my truth because they had done that before I had come out. And we talk all the time, Crystal talks all the time about artists like Tegan and Sarah who really helped her feel comfortable in her own identity and being queer and being an artist. And it's just that ripple effect. Just you can help someone else and that reaches someone else and that reaches someone else. And hopefully you just continue to make those safe spaces and help people find community so that they feel comfortable being themselves and being proud of who they are. And I think that's exactly what happened for our band and for me personally. And so it just feels really sweet that like the same space that made me really comfortable to come out and be myself is the same space that's helping people who really love our music come out and feel comfortable. And that's like a really beautiful thing. And hopefully those people are able to do that same thing for somebody else. And it just, you know, grows and grows.
Yeah, it's inspiring. I think it's infectious. I was just talking about this with a friend. Like, that really is kind of the answer. I feel like, and as any type of artist, no matter like what form it is, it's like your job is to tap into that like authenticity and that identity.
Yeah. I want us next to do quite a deep dive on these last two albums you've released, because there was a time within the pandemic when the second album came out where I was like jamming to it and thinking like, oh, I really can't wait to talk to them about it. But now you have a third. So now we have like two albums we have to talk about. But like that's like pretty much like Christmas for me. So like the big thing I wanted to ask at top. Yeah, I'm glad you like that. The big thing I wanted to ask on top was, let's start with Under My Influence. When you reflect on those songs, how close are the finished songs on that album to what you had envisioned as a band? Because I feel like that becomes a thing when you go on to the studio again after the first one, when you have like these kind of concrete ideas. Like, Elisa, we could start with you. Like, how do you reflect on that?
For Umi, I mean, we wrote so much for that record. Like, me and Crystal were like treating that album like a day job. Like, it was like Monday through Friday, sessions from like 1 to 7 every single day.
I love that.
And we did that for like a year straight and wrote like a ridiculous amount of songs, like 70 plus songs or something, and then whittled it down with the girls to like the 14 that felt like the record. And our whole like mission with that album was just like, we wanted to make a really fun record that was like kind of a love letter to like the pop music we grew up on. So that making that record was really just like pure joy, honestly. Like, we learned so much as songwriters. And we tried so many different things on that record. Like, I think if you listen through that record, there's so many different vibes. Like, we really like kind of like broke up whatever anyone's perception of the Aces was, I think, when we put that out. Like, I think there's a strong sonic identity to it that overlapped from the first one, but also like we just went a lot of new places. And I think a lot of, I don't know if there's one song on the record that was completely flipped on its head. I think we did stuff more like that on this record, where songs would either start out as like a super upbeat song and then we'd like flip it into a ballad, like Stop Feeling was that way, or like Don't Freak was initially called Don't Speak, and it was like about like a casual like sexy one night stand vibe, but then we flipped it into Don't Freak being about like panic attacks and anxiety. So like there was a few like major transformations of songs that happened while writing the third record. But for Umi, everything kind of just like flowed. Like, we would just go in with like no real ideas other than just like let's all just like make something fun, and they all came pretty quick. Like, Chris, I don't know if you have any memories of songs that maybe had ended up really different than their initial like conception. But
yeah, I think, I mean, for me with Under My Influence, that really was like my goal was to, we wanted to write like big fucking pop songs. Like, we really wanted to cut our chops as songwriters. We wanted to experiment sonically. That's why you hear songs like, you know, 801, but then you hear a song like Can You Do? Like, there's just, and I think we did a good job, you know, personally, I think we did a good job of maintaining identity through all of it. But I do think that that was our record of really being like, okay, let's like get, let's swing, you know, like let's really swing and go for it. And you know, and we came out with a song like Daydream. That's like our biggest song to date. It's like really the song that people know us for at this point. And then, so I think we achieved what we wanted to achieve through that record. Whereas, but the goal of it, I think, was really like writer's camp, writing really a big, like writing a big song while also like exploring genre. And that was really fun to do. And I think that, yeah, every session was kind of like, we were just kind of wanting to write something good and wanting to kind of see where it would take us. And I think that with I've Loved You, it was a much more bunkered down. Obviously, it was during COVID, so that contributed to it as well. But it was like we worked with one producer over the whole thing, Keith Barron. We wanted the sound to be very we wanted the whole record to run through like with one sound. You know, there was one story that was emerging that felt really important to tell, which is like the story of our reflection and our youth and how that's affected us now. And so, yeah, I think there was more puzzle piecing at the beginning of making I've Loved You. But I think once we clicked in and we knew what the story we were telling, then it all was just kind of there after that. So I don't know. We're kind of the songwriters. I think everyone is different in the way they approach songwriting. But I think we're the type of songwriters that we kind of chase the feeling if it's there, and if it's not there, we don't force anything. I think we're very much of the mindset of like, show up, write, see if something's there. If you're not feeling inspired, like come back tomorrow. And I think there are other types of songwriters who love that chase. Like they'll mull over one lyric for hours, you know? And yeah. I don't know. I think Elisa and I are a lot more like, we go with our like a flow. We try to get into a flow state, and if it doesn't work out, then we kind of will try something else.
Yeah, there's a couple things I want to bring up in reference to what you said there before we jump into I've Loved You. Something that really like kind of that I'm just so proud to hear is what you said about how Elisa, how you kind of treated it like a full-time job, like, you know, at the start there, because I'm a big fan of Nick Cave. I love his music. I love like his history. And something he brings up often is how he keeps office hours when it comes to writing songs. But he notes it as a very significant thing for him, because even though that's like how it's been for like his current state of being, or his state of being for like the last decade or so, he sometimes laments the fact that in his youth he didn't do that. Like, he sometimes thinks to himself, like, oh, the songs I could have wrote if I had a little bit more discipline doing it that way. So, I mean, Not to brag on you guys, but you kind of have one up on Nick Cave, so that's kind of cool.
No, I mean, I think we definitely are not always doing that. I think, obviously, you fluctuate with your creative approach and process. But yeah, I think that creativity, like, the more chances you give yourself to be creative, the more you never know, like, what could happen. And also, songwriting, I think, is really a muscle, and so is almost everything in life, and especially creative things as well. Like, you have to be putting yourself in that position to be inspired, you know, as much as possible, and you never know. Like, we always tell kind of the story of the way Daydream was written, and, like, we almost didn't even go to that session because we were at the end of the writing process for the record. We were exhausted. We didn't want to go. We hadn't met Keith before. He was a new kind of up-and-coming producer. We felt like we had already worked with the people, you know, that we kind of had aimed to work with. And Keith kind of slid in last minute on the session, and Elisa and I were exhausted, and we almost fully canceled it. And we like postponed it a few hours because we were, you know, running behind. And then we showed up and we wrote Daydream in about an hour, and then we left and we were like, oh, cool. Anyway, we did the session just because like it was in our schedule, but I don't think we're going to use it. And Keith was so talented and great. Maybe we'll work with him on the next record, but we're done now with the record kind of thing. Yeah. And Daydream got pushed to the back. Like we didn't even send the demo to the girls because we were like, nope, we have the record. Like Under My Influence is done. And then I was on a plane going through all of the songs, you know, picking, really making sure, listening to everything. And I listened to Daydream and it felt like I had never heard it before. And I was like, Wow. Wait, this is an amazing song. And I just couldn't stop listening to it. And I was like, wait, Elisa, like, do you remember that song we did? And she like didn't even really remember it. And she was like, wait, send it to me. I sent it to her. And she's like, what? Like, I don't even like, I this feels like a new song to me too. And then we all start listening to it. And then it becomes the leading single. And now it's like the biggest song we've ever put out. So it's like, you just don't know. Like the creative process is, that's what my favorite thing about being a creative is, like, you never know. Like these things are like floating in the air you know what I mean? Like, you're ready to be inspired and pull them out of thin air. And then one minute you can hate it. And then the next minute you can love it. And one minute it can not even make your record. And then the next minute it can be the biggest single on your album. And you just, that chase is like exhilarating to me. And I think it's really what keeps me, and I know the girls, like, in this business and chasing, you know, inspiration. Cause it's like, it's just so, it's like the craziest experience, you know?
You know what's so trippy to me about that whole story is that, like, and I was really keen to bring this up to you in the context of this analogy that I've been using, because something that's come up on this series quite a bit, and I imagine by the time people hear this, they'll have not heard me say it in a while, so I could almost, like, do it with an explainer, but I've lately been viewing music, especially in the context of acts that have multiple albums and, like, you know, a bit of longevity. I've kind of been akinning it to painting. And what I mean by that is, like, you know how, like, when you have a brush and you use it to paint, it always kind of has remnants of the last thing you painted, even when you put it in water and stuff. I feel like music has that in such an interesting way where, like, you're always making something new, but it has traces and remnants of something you did previous. I feel like what's significant about Daydream is, like, it feels that way in the context of the first album. It feels like the biggest bridge to me between the two, the first and the second. So it's interesting that it came so later on in the making of
it. Well, honestly, that was, I think, a big driver as to why we thought that maybe it shouldn't make the record, because we were like, it sounds too much like the first record. Like, we were trying to kind of do something new. And that was kind of the thing. As we're like, oh, maybe it's like, I remember feeling like kind of bored of it. Because I was like, oh, this was kind of the vibe we were doing with When My Heart Felt Volcanic. And it doesn't as much feel like as exciting as some of the other songs on Umi do. But in hindsight, I mean, it's like the best. I mean, the whole point of Umi was to write pop smashes, and that's the best one. So I think we just were looking at it from the different, the wrong angle when we first wrote it.
Yeah. Yeah. This next question is a bit of like a reflective one. I love to get all four of you's take on it, because, you know, when you think about it, I've brought this up when I talk to musicians and even my friends as well, because, like, there's a couple friends of mine I have that we love music. And it's kind of crazy how somehow, whether it be some weird thing in the cosmos or whatever, that the third album by a band ends up being so pivotal. Like, I feel like a lot of the time it reveals both a new side of the band to both the band itself and the audience. And I wonder if that's been your experience with releasing this third album in the world, if you've found that.
Yeah, I think that I've noticed that pattern with a lot of bands too, like over history and stuff like that. And I was talking with our engineer, James, about that as well. Like, while we were making this record, he was like, yeah, it's like every band, like, they're usually defined by their third record. Like, that's usually the record they, like, really find their sound on. And I don't know what that is. Like, I think from our experience, like, you know, we started making music professionally, like, so young. Like, we started writing that first EP and that first record when I was like 16 and Crystal was like 17. So I think that is a lot of like experimenting happening in the beginning. Although I do kind of feel like we were luckily working with some amazing people and able to kind of really find out what our sound was pretty early on. I think we kind of came to that conclusion pretty young for pretty early for an artist. But I think the third record, definitely this record feels that way for us, in a huge sense that, like, we almost self-titled this record because, like, the contents of it and, like, the sentiment behind it and just the whole sound of it just feels like the music we made when we were kids. And it feels like some of our truest art that we've ever made, and, like, truest, like, our story and, like, where we come from. So yeah, I feel like it takes practice being able to get to that point. It takes experience being able to get to that point as an artist and knowing how to, like, articulate your experiences throughout your life, like, from doing lyrics forever and having put out enough music that you feel ready to be, like, vulnerable enough through it, and you're not keeping up as many walls anymore as you were maybe in the beginning. So I think it's kind of just that third time is the charm vibe, when you just, I think the dream is that the more records you make, like, the better you get at making them.
Yeah, I think too, like, even just how we've all grown, you know, so much individually, like, we made the first record. I just feel like if I, like, heard this record just put out, like, when we were first doing this professionally when we were like 18, 19 years old, I would have just like never believed it that you put out a record like this, that we talked about the things we talked about, that it like sounded the way it did. I just think, yeah, that just like shows a lot of growth too, of just like as people, like we're just really different people and have just like grown and matured so much too through the process of records, that I think undoubtedly they're gonna be really different.
Yeah, and Katie, I mean, I want to hear what you have to say, but I also have to point out, in the context of like musically, the album is like fantastic, but it's really interesting the different contexts that the guitar chords have throughout the songs. Like, it feels like it was very like important and deliberate for you that there was like this sense of texture where there wasn't ever too much peaking or like dipping. And like, I just wanted to point out that something that was like really stuck out to me while listening to it.
Yeah, Keith too, who produced this last record, is like an insane guitar player, like unbelievable. So it was really fun to get to play with him. But we did this whole record really intentionally analog, and recorded everything through an amp and used pedals, and whereas our last two records we didn't really do that. So it was really fun to just kind of go back to the basics and like just buy a shit ton of pedals and turn them all on and just get really creative with sound. And we just had a lot of fun. It was really just really fun. I felt like to like all the songs, like all the chord progressions are just like they're really simple and kind of to the point, and it just leaves a lot of space to have like those big kind of lead lines over them, and all the lead lines are really melodic, which I really love. And yeah, I feel like just very like simple but complex in their own ways, and in their own unique sounds, and just the sounds and tones we were able to make together was just like really really fun.
Crystal, could I give you the opportunity to be like Michael Scott from The Office for a quick sec? Because I think you should acknowledge that, like, not only did you four make this album, but your bandmates in general, they sound pretty badass on it. I mean, obviously it's like you do too, but if you want to take a second, just kind of give the three Employee of the Month awards, I think you have a second where you can.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, of course. I mean, I think the girls have really, I think this record was really cool to get to watch them play, because they have really solidified the way that they play. And I think we leaned into that a lot on the record. There was not a ton of you should play it like this. I feel like, I mean, maybe the girls have a different opinion on that, but I feel like I really wanted, as a Katie, to play the guitar like you play the guitar. Like, I want that on the record. And Ken play the bass the way you play the bass and do the fills. And, you know, Ken has a very specific way that she plays. And like, I wanted that, especially on a song like Miserable, and Elisa as well, like, play the drums the way you do. Like, you're the only person. I wanted to, like, it was really important that this record really felt like our record, and we could hear those little intricacies of how each other play. And I genuinely, like, you know, I admire the girls so much for their talent and musicianship, and I wanted that to shine forward on this record very apparently. And so you can hear it, like, you can see, when I listen to the record, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like a classic drum roll by Elisa. She's been doing that since she was like 11, you know, perfecting that. That's a classic Ken fill. I can hear the way she plays bass. She's been playing that her whole life. And like, that's a classic, like Katie would classically choose like those notes. You know what I mean? Like you can really hear their individual personalities on the record. If you have been a fan of us for a while, if you've seen us play live, and we do that in our live show as well. Like, I love that there's this moment for Elisa and Ken to really kind of play and break down the way that they play their individual instrument. And they got to just add in all those fills and like do whatever they wanted. So there's a lot of just freedom, I think, in the creative process, especially as an individual on this record. Like, everyone was just allowed to like play, and then we would pick through together and decide what we wanted it to sound like. And yeah, it was really really fun, and couldn't have done it obviously without their talent and without them, their kind of know-how. And I think the record sounds the way it does very much so because of the four individuals on the record.
Well, I mean, if you'll also allow me, and I'm sure the three of you will agree with me in saying, but Crystal's singing is also pretty badass, especially like I'm thinking particularly in the context of songs like Suburban Blues and Stop Feeling and Person. Like, I feel like the way the range got expanded, and also just like really subtle in those three in particular, it's like Who even is this person, right?
I think something that was really cool about Crystal's vocals on this record, we talked about it a lot, and Crystal and me have a very sisterly relationship when it comes to her being in the vocal booth, because I'm always like being like, do this, try this. And she's like, shut up. we push it. I think we appreciate each other in that sense. But I think what was really cool about this record, kind of what Crystal was talking about, where everyone kind of reverted to the way they played when they were younger, she also was reverting to the way she sang when she was younger, because Crystal's always had this like amazing, like raspy, like deep powerhouse voice. And I think that through our songwriting when we were younger, through like our more like kind of pop, some of the pop songs we wrote on Umi and stuff, and some of the vocal direction we took on the first record, I think we talked about how she wasn't totally able to tap into that like amazing kind of raspy, like kind of like rock element to her voice. And so we really wanted to do that on this record. We really wanted to bring her rasp out and like bring out those like very unique, very like Crystal things on this record. Like we'll sit there and like isolate the vocal stems and just like sit back like all in like awe, like listening to like her like 50 layers of like amazing vocals that she did for every song. And I think that another thing that's really cool about this record too is like the way that we also pushed the range as well. Like Crystal has wanted to beat me up a couple times on tour for this, but like there's a few like high notes in certain songs that are like, it's amazing that she can like hit them. And I don't think we like went over thinking about her having to hit them every night. But
yeah, there's like this whole thing because Elisa and I were writing, because Elisa and I were at the melodies together, and so Elisa's register in her voice is a lot higher than mine, like even the way she talks and stuff. So when she starts like singing and coming up with melodies, they're naturally like in this very high range for me. And we won't think about that, and I'll be like, oh yeah, that sounds great. And then I get in the vocal booth and I'm like, wait, whoa, this is really high. And Elisa's like, it's not that high. And I'm like, well, your voice is like so much higher than mine naturally. But I think it's been, I mean, it's definitely a very vocally challenging record, which recording it, it didn't feel that way, but singing it live and singing these songs back to back have definitely been challenging. There's a bridge in Not the Same that is, I do remember recording that and being like, guys, this is a different decibel. Like, this is way too high. Yeah. And Keith and the girls were like, no, it's sick. Like, push it.
I remember that moment, like, so specifically, because like with this, especially with the writing of this third record, something we did a lot was like we would go in initially and we would write like up, we'd write the song like up to the bridge, and then we would like leave it and we'd be like, okay, we want to like, the session's good for today, we're gonna let that one marinate and we're gonna keep writing the album. And then like we would come back to songs, and if we really loved a song and felt moved by it, then we would finish it in the studio. Like that's like kind of what we did for all these songs. And so when it came to recording Not the Same, we loved that song. We knew we wanted to finish it. And we were at Westlake Studios in LA, specifically in like the iconic like Michael Jackson room. And we realized we like needed to write a bridge for this song.
Yeah. So these motherfuckers like wanted me to be MJ in the goddamn
I think the spirit of MJ took over, because me and Crystal like scuttled over to like the piano in like the big live room, and like she started playing piano and we like started singing and like going back and forth with melodies, and we start singing this bridge, and it's like, obviously it's like my favorite bridge on the whole record. It's like this like beautiful, like high sweeping, like, so what do we do? Like this super high melody, and it's gorge. So we're like, okay, we're doing that. And then Crystal gets in the booth to sing it, and she like, I remember you going for the note for the first time, and you were like, wait, whoa, like, this is like, are we gonna do this? And me and Keith were like, yeah, do it. And like, I remember like, he like went back and forth, and like of Crystal just like attacking those lines like over and over and over again until she like hit them perfectly. And I think we were just like, yeah, we'll figure it out when it comes to the live show.
Literally, I'm like, we'll figure it out. It's called I'll figure it out. But you know, it's been great though. Like, I do feel I've loved, I felt very intimidated when we started rehearsing this record for a few songs, and I was like, oh my God, I got to figure out how to be able to sing this. And I feel like I have a different level of vocal comfort because of the push that I've had to, you know, I've had to learn how to how to keep my voice, how to sing these songs, how to go for much higher notes than I usually go for. And I feel like I've really like instilled some more confidence in myself vocally because of the record, because of bridges like that. And I love that about, you know, Keith and obviously the girls as well. Like there was always this, like there, anytime I would be vocally hesitant about anything, there would just be like, you can do it. Let's do it. Track it. Like you can do it. And I'd be like, I can do it. I can do it. You know? And then,
yeah.
And then I would track it. Like Katie, I know like writing like the Always Get This Way solo and stuff, and Keith helped write that as well with her. And like, I was like, damn, like that's a crazy solo for Katie to play. Like she's never played a solo like that. That is as fast as that, as long as that. And I was just, solo. I don't know. There's this trust between four of us that I was literally just like, Katie can do it. Like,
she'll figure it out.
But I love that because I think we really do have this like confidence in each other. And when we're not feeling that confident in ourselves, the thing that always pushes me forward is like the confidence I get, the girls really believe in me. So like when I'm not believing in myself, and I feel like we lend that to each other around where we're just like, you can do it, just do it, figure it out.
Yeah, I feel like that translates even to what we do outside of music. Like we're super hands-on in all parts of our band. Like Katie like MDs our show, and like I design like our tour ad mats and our merch, and like Elisa directs all of our music videos. Like it's, and Crystal like styles us for our music videos. Like we just have this optimism when it comes to like anything band related, where it's just like, no, we know, and like we'll just figure out how to do it. Didn't like none of us had experience doing those things before, but I think it's been like a cool, yeah, like we fuel each other in that way.
Well, this is a nice segue because I have to say, it's funny because naturally social media is one of those things that like I feel if I'm ever in a position where I have to talk about it, it makes me feel older than I am. Only 33, just pointing that out. But like, it always makes me feel old the way I talk about social media because it could be annoying. But I will say that like, I'll see how your band uses social media, and beyond the aspect of promoting music and shows, the way you're even talking about, there is this sense of like talking to the fans and really making them feel heard, but also doing it in a way where there's enough space for the fans to talk amongst themselves. And like I've seen it a couple times throughout the pandemic where I've seen people connect to a stranger within the comment section of a post that you made.
I think that's kind of become like the coolest part about this band, is like the fact that it has created a community for people, like just like what it did, kind of Katie touched on this a little bit earlier, like kind of like exactly what it did for us, you know, like we became each other's like safe space and like best friends in this like conservative town, and kind of helped like raise each other that way, and like kind of give each other a sense of community in that way. And it's kind of cool to see that like that dynamic between the four of us is like kind of translated into like our fan base. And like I love that our fans like are really friendly. There's like a strong friendly culture amongst our fans, and it's like a pretty known thing that you can like come to an Aces show and like make friends. Like everyone's pretty friendly, everyone's like kind of looking out for people that maybe like came alone and like need people to stand with, like. And we've had so many fans come up to us and be like, I've met my best friend at your shows. I've met my fiance at your shows. Like, it's just cool. I think that's the coolest part about it. And then it makes the whole thing feel like even bigger than like just the music. Like it feels like just to be able to be a part of people's lives and like that way is just like such an honor.
We just had our first Aces wedding. We had fans who met on our very first tour who just got married this year, which is cool.
Oh my god. Oh. Yeah. What are their, do you know their names off the top of your head? If not, I could totally edit this out. Don't worry.
Shout out Sam and Becca, right?
Yeah, Sam and Becca.
Oh, beautiful. Wow. That's awesome. Oh my god. That's so trippy.
Yeah,
it is awesome. I'm like stunned at even thinking that, because it's like that's something they'll remember for the rest of their lives. You know, it didn't come up yet in the context of this talk. Before I get to like just the last thing I wanted to bring up, it is kind of wild to think that, because I was thinking earlier about like the title track and of this third album, and how in some ways I feel like it operates as like a really good, I think, defining track for the band, or one of, but like, I gotta like give it to your drummer here for being a pretty kick-ass musical director. I've noticed. I've seen it. That was like, you did a damn good job, man.
Oh, the videos. Sorry. Music. Thank you so much. Sorry, you said musical director, so I was confused.
Oh, yeah, right. My bad. Yeah. The video for the title track is so sick. And I feel like it does such a good job at like conveying the vibe of the song.
Thank you. Yeah, I think for, are you talking about I've Loved You For So Long?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was honestly probably like one of my favorite videos, and I just love how simple it is. Just like the essence of it is just very like, it's literally just us four spending a day together, like running around Griffith Park and like going to a diner. Like it's like so just like us. And I feel like that song is so us that like it just felt like really fun to make and super cheap and DIY and chill, but it's, it turned out really beautiful. And like, I agree, it's one of my favorite videos I think we've done. It's just simple and just nice.
Yeah, I really love that song as well, because I feel like that one is so reflective of so much of what we've been talking about in the context of the journey of the band. Because like when I listen to that song, I don't know how to express this like holistically, but I feel like I'm hearing an idea being crystallized in real time, like in the context of four people coming off their own individual skills and like kind of Voltroning the fuck out of this thing into existence. Like it kind of is how that song feels to me.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So the last question I have, it's more of a cheeky one for me, but I'm pretty sure any hardcore Aces fan listening probably also feels this way. And the funny thing is, I thought this while I was at the show. I was like, okay, they don't know this very obvious thing, so I think I should do a service for people and bring it up to you. But who do I have to bribe to bring Put It On The Line back onto the set list? Because I was kind of taken aback not hearing it, I gotta say.
I'm dead. That is the deepest cut.
A deep cut.
That is a deep cut. I mean, oh my god. I forgot that song existed, I'm gonna be real, so...
Oh, god.
Honestly, it hits.
That song hits.
That song is cool. I stand by that song.
Yeah.
No, it's a very cool song. It's so funny. Like, that, again, was, like, one of the last songs written, I feel like, for the record, is that first record. And, again, like, kind of our we wanted to, like, experiment and try something different. And I feel like that's kind of a staple of every record at this point now.
That song was cool, though, because I remember that song came in, like, the final hour after, like, a long day at a songwriting session where everyone was just like kind of frustrated, and we tried like three or four different ideas that just like fell flat, and everyone was just kind of like just frustrated and like annoyed. And then like we kind of pulled that one out at the final hour, and I think that frustration like aided in the process of writing that song. So I remember writing that song really vividly. I love that song.
I feel like that song is very Greenpoint, Brooklyn. Like that song feels like Brooklyn.
Yeah, it feels so much like that studio.
Oh god, it really does. Yeah, so when you do the eventual arena tour, if it's not on the set list, that's a crime. I'm just pointing it out, that's a crime. It should be, or at least even like at least the motif, because like Ken, your bass line on that, like that has to, the world needs to be reminded of your skills on
that bass line. Is fucking sick.
That's sick.
Bass line, like Even Under My Influence was like such a fun record to, we obviously didn't get to tour it that much, but like that was my favorite record to play bass. And there's some fun bass lines in our catalog.
Well, guys, thank you so much. It's so beautiful getting to catch up with you. I always love instances like this, knowing that by the virtue of like how podcasts are, there's someone listening who started listening who had no idea who your band is, and they're gonna go have like the deep dive, and I'm like very jealous of that person because they're not about to be born.
Thank you so much.
We always
love talking to you. Thank you so much.
Hey, anytime.
Yeah, so good to see you, Ken.
So good to see you, too.